Blog Talk Radio.
Another Friday night with nothing to lose, and I'll be damned. Wow. Yeah. We've got a really, really cool and interesting guest here tonight. Our featured guest, one Crystal Ravenwolf. She's known as a psychic, a tarot card reader, and a paranormal investigator. And not only that, on top of all that, I mean, she's a belly dancer too, and so this should be fun, and we'll bring her on here real soon, but in the meantime, I have some questions or concerns about there's this thing going around about being a professional snuggler. But anyhow, I'm going to bring on my co-host here, Mr. Michael D. Gasinski. Are you there, buddy?
Hola, Señor Fougier.
Oh, hola, Mr. Gasinski.
With you, a professional snuggler.
Yeah, well.
Smuggler.
Snuggler, yeah. I don't know what the difference is. What is she smuggling or what is she snuggling? Yeah, have you heard about this Samantha Hess chick? Samantha Hess out of Portland, Oregon. She snuggles professionally and is strictly platonic, allegedly, for $60
an hour. My theory is the reason she says it's strictly platonic is because, you know, prostitution is illegal in this country. It's just like escorts are dates, you know. I'm escorting them. I'm not blowing them.
So. Okay. Well, are you familiar? Have you heard this woman's story? I mean, I don't know. I've heard, sometimes a good hug is the perfect pick-me-up, although it typically doesn't come from a stranger, much less for a fee. But this 29-year-old girl from Portland, Oregon, obviously has tapped into something or has something going on here.
Yeah, apparently. I mean, so $60 she gets.
See, well, $60 an hour to do what? To, like, rub someone's...
Yeah, what does she do, right? I mean, what exactly does the cuddle entail? I mean...
Right. I mean, and who is willing to pay that amount of money to, you know, to snuggle and to, you know, have someone rub your head and all that? And... You know, not have the happy ending. And hey, Dr. Quinn, are you there? Our other host,
I'm
Dr.
Here
Quinn.
Now.
Hello,
I'm
Dr.
Here
Quinn.
Now. I was here a few minutes ago.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, speak up then. Gosh darn it. All right.
You muted me, dude.
Okay. Well, you know, you just gotta speak up and be very clear and loud. All right, yeah, so what
really?
Do you think about this whole Samantha Hess, Dr. Quinn? What's your opinion?
What about it?
What about it?
Hold
what
on.
Do you mean, what about it? Samantha Hess, she is a 29-year-old from Portland, Oregon, okay? And apparently she's been making waves here with this whole, I'm a professional snuggler. I will come to your house and snuggle with you and rub your head and spoon with you for $60 an hour. And she claims it's strictly platonic, okay? And who in their right fucking mind is going to pay that amount of money to, you know, to snuggle with somebody? What's your opinion?
People who are desperately lonely, I think.
People who are desperate. Okay. Wow, sounds like you have experience here. all right. Oh, okay. So you think this is legit?
Would,
I mean, do you really think that? Okay. I mean, would you pay somebody to professionally snuggle with you for $60 an hour, knowing that it's not genuine? It's just somebody, you know, and you would not expect a happy ending.
Some people might you know, expect a little more for that, but I think the argument could be made that people wouldn't.
People wouldn't, but
want to be told.
Okay. Well, I mean, would you personally, Dr. Quinn, pay $60 an hour to have someone, you know, rub your head and spoon with you for an hour or two? I mean, if it's 2 hours,
there you go,
that's $120. I mean, no one, it's not genuine. It's just, you know.
Okay, you missed the part. I don't like people touching me, so no, that's not the point.
You don't like people touching you, huh? Wow.
Not really,
okay.
No.
Huh.
Okay,
let me qualify
that. I don't like people unexpectedly touch me.
Unexpectedly, okay, but if you're paying someone $60 an hour to touch you, what would you think?
I'm saying I wouldn't pay $60 for someone I didn't know to touch me. That's just, that's not something I would even consider.
Okay.
So
you wouldn't even consider that. So, yeah, go ahead, Kaczynski, yeah. What?
Oh, well, you bring me into this.
Well, I mean, would you? Oh.
Now, for the $60, I mean, will she, is there some cosplay? I mean, will she dress up or something? Or,
that's what I'm wondering,
like,
too.
Put on, like, a Wonder Woman costume or something, or whatever gets you going.
Right. And how is it, I mean, who, honestly, can make that kind of money, $60 an hour, just snuggling with somebody? I mean, just, I don't buy it. I don't buy it, but you know what? I'm going to try to get this woman on our show sometime in the near future because it's a very serious issue that we have to discuss with her.
Yeah, what kind of guys pay for this, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm wondering. What? Well, who knows if it's just guys? Do you think maybe she
might
snuggle
yeah,
with women,
might not
too?
Be, yeah.
Maybe she snuggles with, you know, animals, too. For six, I mean, whatever. it just blows my mind. This is like headline news, you know what I mean?
Hello,
oh, I'm a professional snuggler from Portland, Oregon. Look at me, I'm so I'm so different. And look at me, yeah, it's strictly platonic bullshit. I'm not paying anybody $60 an hour for anything like that, unless there's a happy ending. And I think you all know, and everybody else out there listening knows what a happy ending is, right?
No, please explain it to us, Brian.
Okay, well, I don't know. What's a happy ending for you, Dr. Quinn?
I like to call it the Al Gore special.
The Al Gore special. Yeah.
I don't get it.
That works.
All right. Anyway.
Well, you know what? You know what, guys? Jeez. You know what? It's that time of the show where we have to do the Pledge of Allegiance. So let's all stand up. Remove our hats. Remove our hair pieces and everything. We're going to do the Pledge of Allegiance, and we're going to come right back. And you know what? You know who we're going to talk about? Since we're being all patriotic about America, we're going to talk about Rob Ford, that very special mayor from Toronto up in Canada, where they evidently seem to have some sort of free Medicare and all that, but, you know, he has to pay for his crack. Yeah. All right. So in the meantime, let's... Yeah, here we go. Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That gets me every time. God damn. Absolutely. It does. Especially that applause. You know, the applause at the end there, just, wow. God damn, yeah. So, yeah. All right. So, anyhow, wow. Yeah, apparently Dr. Quinn... And the rest of the larger group there have nothing to say about professional cuddlers. Nothing.
Do you need somebody to say something about professional cuddlers? Because I'm sure I can retrieve someone.
Well, quickly retrieve someone and let us know who this person is, and let us know what they think about professional cuddlers. Quickly,
Tim.
Before we move on to Rob Ford, because Rob Ford,
okay.
You know, he...
Would you like to talk about cutlers? All right, here... Hold on, here's Mr. Murray.
Whiskey? Is that whiskey? Hi, yes, hello? Hello?
Would you like to talk about Miss Samantha Hess and her professional cuddling career?
Okay.
Well, apparently not.
Uh-oh.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Would you like to talk about Samantha Hess and her professional cuddling career?
Yes. Actually, I am a client of Miss Hess. I found out about her on Craigslist, and she was a wet nurse for me for 6 months, Hello, are you there?
Oh, yeah, I'm listening. I'd like to hear 6 months, huh?
Well, no, not
how much?
Months,
how much? I mean, that's got to set you back a fine penny there for, you know, $60 an hour.
No. Don't get me wrong. I wasn't there every day for 6 months. It was a weekly contract that I had with her while she was nursing her newborn baby. And she was lactating the entire time. And I thought the $60 was worth it because of the health benefits of the breast milk. However, the only thing that was a drawback was when she would eat broccoli prior to our session. And
right.
I would then ingest the breast milk and have very, very painful gas from the abundance of vegetables that she was eating for the nutrients. However, the drawback to that is, you know, flatulence, which was very embarrassing to me,
right.
And to explain to my wife why I was always so gassed.
All right. Well, thank you for your input. all right. So, yeah, we're going to move on to Rob
is
Ford.
I lost my dad.
Toronto Mayor Rob Ford. Yeah. Let's give it back to Dr. Quinn there.
Yeah, I think I was in a past life, I was in the Whig Party, and I think what happened was I lost my dad. Is she there? Crystal?
All right, well, we're going to move on with
Rob Ford. You wanted to go to Rob Ford?
Yeah, Rob Ford. He
I'm glad the Canadians finally have one of these cocksucker politicians, and it's not just America. Okay,
oh, right.
It finally happened up north.
Right. Yeah, you know, I mean, the Canadians. Yes. And, you know, what's so funny, okay, he's smoking crack. He got called out.
Yeah.
You know? And, man, I don't know. He's become, like, the new fodder for Saturday Night Live and everything else. He's making American politicians look pretty damn okay. You know, and Canada,
right.
all these years have gotten credit for being you know, such assholes and all that. But wow, this guy.
Man, I'm glad that finally they have one of these guys.
Yeah,
well, you
know,
comment in the news the other day. I saw some blurb, you know, where he's getting all these accusations out. He was sniffing lines at some nightclub or something and all this crap. And he's suing them, congressmen, people and shit. But somebody is accusing him of asking one of the women who worked in his office if he could eat their pussy. And his response to that is, he says, "I have enough to eat at home," is what his response to that.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, he's a mess. He's a disaster, this guy.
Well, he looks a lot like Chris Farley would. If Chris Farley was still alive, you have to admit that Rob Ford looks a lot like some of the pictures I've seen of him. But, so anyhow... Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's kind of a relief to see that the Canadians have, you know, kind of messed up a little bit, and it's becoming public news when our politicians and everything here in the U.S. of A. have been criticized and put down so much. So, hey, we're going to bring up our featured guest here in just a minute. In the meantime,
all
we're going
right.
to... Yeah, yeah. One Crystal Ravenwolf, and she
I'm
has
excited,
a lot going on.
I'm excited about this one. Yeah.
Yeah, she has a lot going on. I mean, wow, yeah. Being a psychic, you know, tarot card reader, and she's a paranormal investigator, and man, and a belly dancer. Wow, yeah. So we'll be right
she's
back here.
The, you know, she's from
that?
My old stomping grounds, the Fresno area.
Yeah, from the Fresno area. You're right. Yeah, yes, you know a lot about that. That area, right? Well, go ahead, elaborate. I mean, how was that
well,
your
no,
stomping
I,
ground?
Yeah. Well, I lived in Clovis, California for, like 6 years or something, so,
uh-huh.
And, you know, it's just, It's good to have finally somebody from that part of California, because normally when people think of California, they think of, you know, San Francisco and L.A. Everything in between is considered like the armpit or crotch of California. So it's nice to have somebody that's different.
All right. I agree. All right. We'll be right back here in just a moment. We're going to bring up our featured guest, Crystal Ravenwolf. All right. We'll be right back.
Puff the magic dragon lived by the sea and frolicked in the autumn mist in a land called Hanalei. Little Jackie Paper loved that rascal Puff and brought him strings and sealing wax and other fancy stuff. Oh, Puff the magic dragon lived by the sea and frolicked in the autumn mist in a land called Hanalei. Puff the magic dragon lived by the sea and frolicked in the autumn mist in a land called Hanalei. Together they when Puff roared out his name. Oh, Puff the magic dragon lived by the sea and frolicked in the autumn mist in a land called Hanalei. Puff the magic dragon lived by the sea and frolicked in the autumn mist in a land called Hanalei. Make way for other toys. One gray night it happened, Jackie Paper came no more, and Puff that mighty dragon, he ceased his fearless roar. His head was bent in sorrow, green scales fell like rain. Puff no longer went to play along the cherry.
Puff the magic dragon, indeed. Yes.
Puff.
Gets me puffy every time I hear it. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's what it's alluding to. Maybe it's having a puffy, you know, or maybe being puffy and high. That was from the 70s, so, you know, probably, yeah, probably had nothing to do with anything phallic or whatever. Probably more of a getting high thing. But hey, yeah, let's bring on our featured guest here tonight, the one and only Crystal Ravenwolf, who has so much going on. She is a psychic, a tarot card reader, yes, and paranormal investigator, and she is from your stomping grounds, buddy, there in that area there in California. Let's bring Crystal on, and I'm sure she has tons of fun stuff to share with us. Hello, Crystal. Are you there?
I am. How you doing?
Hello.
Hey, Crystal. Thanks for putting up with us. And thanks for being on more
hey,
than
I
anything.
Hey, I listen to Jillian Puff the Magic Dragon.
Yep, I used to have that on a 45, a little 45. Yep, my kids, like, I tell them what a 45 record is, and they're like, what's that, Dad? That's some sort of weird disc thing that goes round and round.
Yeah, it's a very large CD.
So
how you doing?
Yeah. Hey, great. It's so glad to have you on. You have so much going on. I mean, wow. I mean, first of all, I mean, Crystal Ravenwolf, okay? I mean, psychic, tarot card reader, paranormal investigator, and belly dancer on top of that.
And
you have so much going on. I mean, that's amazing. That, to me, it's very fascinating,
and soon to be author, too.
Soon to be author, really? Wow, okay, please elaborate. Yeah, let us know about that before we move on with the psychic stuff.
Yeah, I've been working on my tarot book for a while now, and it'll be ready for release in 2014, along with my own illustrated tarot deck to go along with it.
Oh,
wow. Nice.
Yeah. I'm really excited about it.
Is that going to be at bookstores or through your website or what?
Actually, yes. It'll be through my website and then through it'll be sold on Amazon and a lot of different other it'll probably be put through a lot of the metaphysical stores. So there will be a number of places people will be able to check it out at.
Well, nice. Well, okay, first of all, I have to ask you, because I'm fascinated with the, you know, the whole, you know, psychic, you know, tarot card reader, paranormal thing, simply because, and it's because of my mom. My mom brought me up that way. She was into tarot, you know, cards and psychics. And I remember as a kid and a teenager going to many psychic readings and stuff like that with my mom. She was very into that and very in tune to that and still is to this day. And so it's like, I mean, at what point, how did you become, or how did you know you were, you know, psychic, clairvoyant, or into that whole spiritual side of you? I mean, that to me is fascinating.
Well, I always have been. I was raised
at what age?
I
mean,
family.
Uh-huh.
I can't remember a time when it wasn't a part of conversations that were being had, especially like me and my sister. But I really started reading tarot about 20 years ago, a little over 20 years ago, because that was the form of divination that I chose, and it kind of helped me to put all the pieces into place to create the bigger picture, so to speak.
Uh-huh.
But I've always been very clairvoyant when it came to other people, and I've always seen spirits.
Really?
Oh, wow.
At what point? I mean, do you remember, you say you've always seen spirits. Well, what do they look like, or how do they manifest themselves?
Different ways. It's a little hard to explain. It's not like if I was to meet you face-to-face. I don't see, like, a man standing in front of me with, I mean, because that would be really cool if I did, but I don't. I would probably wet my pants if I did. But it's different. I feel it. I can feel what they look like. I can feel what they're feeling. I can feel what they need to say. And I don't know how it works, but I do know that everybody can do it. It's not something that's only a few people are gifted with. We're all connected. You know, we all come from the same atom. So... and I'm not talking about Adam and Eve either. I'm talking about
right, well, I know Adam. Yeah,
Adam.
I get it.
Yes. So we're all connected to each other. We can all do this. I think I'm just a little more aware of it than, say, other people are. I look at it this way. Everybody can dance. But some people are just, when they're born or when they're growing up, they're just gifted with movement. And once they take a few lessons, they become great at it. Clairvoyant abilities or psychic abilities are the same way. We all can do it. We're all born with it. Some people are just born more aware than others are. Plus, society, I think, conditions us that it's not real at a very young age.
Mm-hmm.
So people just, once they stop believing, it's no longer open to them, if that makes any sense.
No, that does make sense. So you're saying that whole clairvoyant sort of psychic ability is innate, and it's in all of us. Yet, it's either enhanced or inhibited by what, social or personal, like environmental type things, like the way you're.
If
yeah?
you're raised in a family that tells you that no, what you're feeling or what you're seeing isn't real, you know,
mm-hmm.
we believe what we're told. And after a while, especially as you grow up in age, you're going to start believing that, yeah, it's not real, and then you don't pay attention to them. But haven't you ever had a feeling in your gut like, maybe I shouldn't go down that street right there. I'm going to go the
yeah.
other way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yeah,
that's
sure.
it right there. That's your intuition kicking in and telling you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, oh,
and
yeah.
That's all
I get that.
That's all it is. I'm just tapping into it a little deeper than most people do.
Okay, so, all right. So you think, okay, so intuition to you, I mean, according to what you just said, is the same thing as having, it's that psychic sort of ability that's innate
yes.
in all of us.
Absolutely.
Yeah?
It's absolutely a part of it. I mean, can you scientifically prove your intuition?
No.
Not really, but we
no.
all have it, right?
Yeah, we do. And you just have those, yes, you're right. No, I agree. I really agree. I mean, I was brought up, you know, in a very strange, you know, household where my father was, you know, a very strict atheist, and my mom was pretty much, you know, she was very spiritual and kind of into all of this stuff, you know what I mean? So it was very weird for me because, you know, I've had those moments, you know, and even deja vu. I mean, you know, people try to, like, I've heard some people say deja vu is just, that's just, you've had a mild seizure. It's like, what? Have you heard that before? I mean, I don't know.
People need to be able to explain the unknown. They need to be able to put an explanation to it. And sometimes there's just no explanation to it.
No, there isn't.
And sometimes
there isn't.
We just don't know. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
I know exactly what you're talking
okay.
about. Right.
You know, I don't know when in our society it stopped being okay to just not know.
Right.
Yeah, when the unknown became so scary.
Right. Okay, so, wow. Okay, so how long have you been, I mean, okay. Well, no. This is very fascinating to me. And you know,
and,
I assume.
And this is a very passionate subject for me, so I can talk forever on it. Okay,
well, that's perfect.
I'm
that's why we wanted you on here, because I knew, and we knew that you would be, you know, someone to talk to and who would have a lot to talk to about, you know, to everybody and to reveal all this and all that. And everything you have going on, you know, with the whole tarot cards and all that and that book and your design for it and everything. I mean, we got plenty of time to touch upon all this. And, I mean, it's like, okay. So you are psychic, you know, you're into the tarot cards and all this and that. Have you done that? Have
yes,
you ever gone on, you know, gone
to...
One
thing is, you don't have to be psychic to read the tarot cards, or you don't have
okay.
to
well,
be
well, okay.
open to your psychic abilities. Absolutely. The tarot cards themselves will tell you the story.
Okay, I know. I want to hear about
with
the
your
tarot
mom,
cards.
Right?
Well, yeah, my mom used to be into it, and the first real girlfriend I ever had, she was into, you know, tarot card reading and all that stuff, too.
Awesome.
I would... Yeah, and I would, you know, like to hear more about that and how that, I mean, have you gone to, like, festivals and stuff like that and done readings or whatnot?
No, I'm not as commercial as all that as far as going to a big festival. And simply for the reason, I believe that they are very personal.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think it needs to be done in a room full of people. Where everybody's hearing your business when they walk by, you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
Most of my clients come to me because they need guidance in their life for one reason or another, and that's what I give them with the tarot readings. I don't tell the future, and I tell everybody that. simply because the future can be changed with a choice. So I can't tell the future. Nobody can. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
I can't tell you that, you know, don't worry if you're lonely, because next Thursday, you know, dress up really nice about 7 and head to Starbucks, and then watch for the guy with the dark hair and blue eyes that comes in because he's your soulmate. You know, make sure you're there at 7. You don't want to be late, you know?
I think that's one of the misconceptions about psychics. People think they see movies and they think that's really what goes on, you know?
I'll tell you what, if I could do that, I would not be living in an apartment. You know what I mean?
Right.
I would definitely be living way better than I am now,
I'd
be traveling the world.
You'd be Powerball winner.
You're right. That's a good point, Kaczynski. It's like, if everyone's, you know, true perception of, you know, a psychic was like that, it'd be like, yeah, you'd win the lottery every freaking week, you know? I mean,
wouldn't that be fabulous? I mean, on a serious point, wouldn't that be fabulous?
Yeah, right. You'd be a billionaire, and, you know, there you go. But no,
exactly.
But you know, it's much more spiritual than that, and that's something I have seen and I've learned over the years. It really is. I mean, and I'm just fascinated with your whole like moniker, your name, the Crystal Ravenwolf. I mean, I know crystals, I know all about crystals because you know my mom's been into crystals a lot, and they have a very spiritual like meaning and all that. And then you got the whole Ravenwolf,
right?
Along with crystal, yeah. How did you come up with that?
Okay.
If you don't mind me asking.
I'm really going to freak you out, okay? Because the Raven was given to me in a vision. And I'll explain it so I don't sound like a hokey-pokey Hollywood, you know, charmed kind of psychic. You know that place when you wake up in the morning and you're not really asleep anymore, but you're not awake either?
Oh, yeah, that lucid, I've heard of this, lucid dreaming. I've had lucid dreams where you're kind of like, yeah.
That little space where you're not awake and you're still snoring and everybody around you usually laughs if they're awake.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not asleep either anymore. And you're very aware of everything that's going on.
Uh-huh.
That's where I was. And a large white wolf that's been with me since I was a little kid came in. His name's Takaya. And he came in to my bedroom right by the bed, and I kind of put my hand out to pet him, and a raven flew in the room and landed on his back, and that was when I woke up and I just knew.
Wow.
I use raven medicine a lot whenever I do healings, especially when I do shamanistic journeys to receive lost soul pieces. I use raven medicine a lot. I work with my animal totems and my animal guides, and I actually work with animal spirits a lot more because I simply like animals more than I do people.
I think that's a consensus among lots of people, yeah.
Exactly. So, and I tend to be very connected to them a lot more so than I am with people. So, I'm sure you've heard a spiritualist or psychics talk about their guides that they work with. Mine are animals.
Uh-huh.
Because they're who I connect with the most.
Right.
And they're pure.
Yeah, they're more pure than
there's no pretense in what they're doing. If a lion is attacking an antelope, he's not doing it in a very sneaky, underhanded way. It's very pure. You know, he's hungry. You know, I can't think of anything more pure than that. It's not beautiful to watch, but nature's
not always
beautiful. It's just necessary.
Right.
And I love that. So I work with animal spirits a lot. And Raven and the Wolf just happen to be my longest guide. Guides come and go, but they've never left. So I just think I have so much more to learn from them.
Yeah. So I got.
That
I mean
that
makes sense.
That was a longer explanation than you expected, right?
No, not at all. This is exactly what I expected, and I wanted to hear. This is great.
Oh, good. Okay.
Oh, yeah. So you mentioned lost lost soul pieces? I mean, what is a lost soul piece? Because for all of us who aren't really, you know, in the know or whatnot,
right.
What's a lost soul piece? I'll be happy to tell you. Okay.
A lost soul piece, I believe that every time you go through a traumatic experience in your life, you lose a piece of your spirit, because that's the spirit's way of handling it. It just kind of disconnects, and it's lost there in that moment. So what I do is I go back and I collect all those soul pieces so that the person that I'm working on, can their spirit can be whole again. You can't be strong when you're missing parts. Have you ever heard anybody say, after such and such happened, I never was the same again?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's because they were missing a soul piece.
Right. Okay.
So I go back and collect those soul pieces. And the way that I see those soul pieces, and, you know, a lot of people that do this, they have their own way of doing it. But in my way of doing it, say something traumatic happened to you when you were 7. I would see you at 7, and I would talk to you, and I would let you know, it's okay to come back now. You don't have to be afraid anymore. This isn't happening anymore. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's a therapy and a healing way of helping people move past the trauma and become their own whole spirit again, their own person again, so that they can move on, you know, to find their own spiritual enlightenment, whatever that is, because I believe spirituality is very personal.
Mm-hmm. It
you
is.
Know, but it's hard to do that when you're missing soul pieces. And
wow,
the raven,
okay.
he flies with me and kind of helps me find them.
Excellent.
Wow.
So, okay,
that's a very small explanation of a very large picture, if that makes sense.
Well, yeah, it is. It is. It does make sense to me. I mean, your explanation was excellent. Just trying to wrap my head all around this. I mean, I have had, some background in it because of my upbringing, which was very strange,
right.
You know, living with an atheist and a, you know... and an atheist father and a mother who was very much into this whole psychic and spiritual stuff. It's kind of like, you know, so I've always been kind of fascinated and torn between the two and all that. And so,
right.
Yeah. As far
well,
as like,
you know, when,
now,
when you're working with things that you can't see, it's real
uh-huh.
hard to believe in them.
It is.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even
right,
for
right.
people
oh, I know
who
what
are
you mean.
Very religious in a dogmatic kind of way, and they say, you know, you have to have faith even though you don't see it. But then you start talking about anything psychic, and they say, oh, but that's not real because you can't see it. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
But you really can, because you can feel it. It's just another
mm-hmm.
sense. I mean, you can feel the energy. Energy is very tangible. If you rub your hands together and then you pull them apart just a little bit, you can feel the energy between your hands. It's tangible.
Yeah, it is. It is tangible.
We're
what,
all
you,
energy.
I've
yeah,
never heard of,
energy.
You know, that's a good point, the way you put it like that. I mean, energy
it's
being
simple.
Tangible.
It's easy for anybody to understand.
And you know, what's funny is, you know, I have very weird experiences at times. You know, and I am a skeptic, you know, to be honest with you, I am a skeptic, you know, because of the way I was
right.
raised. But at the same time, I have very weird, distinct experiences where I'll be sitting in my office and I feel like somebody's tapping me on the back, you know,
uh-huh.
and I always like to, you know, I always want to think and hope it's my dad, you know, ever since he's passed away, because I miss him like, you know, like nothing else, you know, and I find that kind of ironic because, you know, he was such an atheist and everything else. And, you know, but there's that part of me that, and it just feels real. And I can feel it. And I look, there's nothing there. But I don't know, you know, you know what I mean?
Next time it happens, just say, hi, Dad, I'm doing good. I mean, just talk to him.
I try. I try, you know, it's like I've done it. I mean, I've done it. I've turned my head and I was like, hey, how you doing? You know, I just kind of freaks me out a little bit, but at the same time, it's like, you know, I wanna believe and I wanna feel that and all that.
Absolutely.
I got to share a story with you, Crystal, if you don't mind.
Not at all.
Okay, yeah. Well,
I
remember one of my first experiences going to one of those psychic fairs, which you say you don't participate in psychic fairs. You've never really, you don't.
Not in the sense of a psychic fair, because when you go to the psychic fairs, you see a whole bunch of booths with a whole bunch of people being things done. When I do readings, they're extremely personal, so I'm in a closed room where it's very quiet, it's very closed off from everybody else, and it's just me and the quorant, me and the speaker, or the seeker. So that a lot of times things that come out, because, you know, when I'm doing a reading with the tarot cards, I'm also kind of tapping into them, and sometimes the things that I see are pretty deep. And they need to be talked about because, you know, what happens in the past always, you know, until it's dealt with, it dictates the future. You know what I mean? Or at least it dictates our now. One of the my favorite things that I ever heard, and I heard it on Criminal Minds, of all places. I mean,
that's
I can't even get credit
right.
for, you know, credits too.
Right.
But it was real deep for me, and that was... our scars are simply there to remind us of the past, not to dictate our future, right? So I keep that in mind all the time when I'm doing a reading, and sometimes I'll see something in them that needs to come out. Nobody else needs to hear this. Nobody else even needs to know because it's very hard for them to even hear. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But once we work past that, we can find solutions. We can get out of that problem. We can get into the solution. And that can help them with their now and with their future, you know, so that they're no longer carrying that baggage around with them. So I take readings very seriously, so I would never, ever do that in front of a whole room full of people.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Oh, that makes sense. That makes sense. So, okay, well, you know, you
anyway,
take me...
Anyway, go on with your story.
Well, I was just going to share the story that, one of my first experiences at a... one of those psychic fairs, I was, you know, in one of those booths, you know, and it wasn't even a booth, it was just a table, and there was people all around and all kinds of, you know, background noise and all that crap, you know, just like you said, which, you know, and, you know, this woman, she was reading my palms. Do you do any palm reading at all?
No, I do not. No.
No? Okay. Well, she was reading my palms and then, you know, asking me questions, and she told me, she said, "You are a star child." And I'm like, "I'm what?" Have you ever heard of that? A star child? She said, "You're a star child." And I was like, "Okay, well, what's a star child?" And she's like, "It means you're not from this planet." I'm not making this up. I swear to God. Okay, I have not shared this with very many people. And I said, "Okay, well, what's a star child?" And she said, "Well, it's a spirit. You know, you're actually an alien from a different planet." This sounds like what, Dianetics, L. Ron Hubbard, but...
The galactic stuff, yeah.
But looking back now, I can see that, but, you know, at the time, I had no idea. I was like, okay. She said, "You're here to observe." And I was like, "Observe?" And she said, "Yeah, you're here on this planet. You're an alien. Your soul," she said, "my soul," or whatever, you know, whatnot, is
right,
here to observe.
Your spirit.
Yeah, my spirit is here inhabiting, you know, in human form to observe and to take all your knowledge back to wherever she didn't, you know, she couldn't say any specific planet or anything like that. And I found this fascinating. It's like, okay, I'm a star child.
Well, there's a lot of people that do believe that on a serious matter. There's a lot of people who do believe that, you know, and I'm not going to say they're right or wrong. That's not my place. Not even going to touch that.
I just wanted to hear your opinion on it. I found it fascinating, and it had stuck with me.
Yeah,
I mean, this is
say,
I mean, we're talking about this happened
say.
Back when I was like 18 years old, and you know, I'm like 40 some years, 100 old at this point, and it's like, you know, it still sticks with me. It's like a star child just here to observe and to report back, and I'm kind of like, yeah, you know, it's like, I find that fascinating. But it does sound like something L. Ron Hubbard or something like that would have come up with. But at the same time,
fascinating.
It's like,
It is fascinating. And I do know a little about the subject because there are a lot of people here in the Central Valley who believe that way. And,
really?
And it's brought them a lot of joy and enlightenment and serenity into their lives, which I think is the whole point in spirituality. That's why I say, you know, it might not be how I believe, but it's how a lot of people believe, and it seems to be doing some really good things for them. So I ain't touching it. I'm leaving that alone because it's working for them. You know what I mean?
So I can hold on to my star child fantasy and feel okay with it.
Hold on to it. You are a star child, which is, I mean, I can think of a lot of worse things to be, you know?
Or it doesn't make me a Scientologist, does it? I don't want to turn into, you know,
no,
John Travolta
dude.
Or...
I think
or Tom Cruise here.
I don't think you have enough money to be a Scientologist.
<That's>
I probably shouldn't have said that, but, you know. But, no, you know, that's what's so fantastic about spirituality.
Uh-huh.
Is there is a plethora of beliefs out there.
Uh-huh.
And you know, when you let your mind go and you don't hold on to the dogmatic, you know, teachings that most of society was brought up on.
Uh-huh.
You know, like the totally believable, you know, we die, raise in 3 days in physical form, and then, you know, ascend.
Mm-hmm.
When you let go of that and you let your mind go, who's to say that they're not right?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I've done a lot of reading on this subject because it fascinated me too on a personal level. It didn't fascinate me as in I believed, but it fascinated me and I wanted to know more.
Right.
And so some of the things that they believe in are quite interesting, really. And so, you know, I definitely think that, once again, you know, spirituality is extremely personal. And it's doing some really good things for a lot of people who were lost. And now they're awake and aware of themselves as a higher being. And I say, you know, rock on. Good for them. Because it's doing more for them than whatever it was they believed in before that.
Right. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks for your input. That's excellent to hear.
Hey.
I mean, you know, I don't feel so weird now for, you know, believing in this star child concept because I didn't elaborate mine. This woman, she went on to describe, and the way she described the star child thing, it fit me to a T, and it still fits me to a T this day. I'm somebody who likes to observe and watch people and all
yeah.
this and that and kind of analyze
it.
You know what I mean? And she went on to describe, you know, you're a little different. You don't always fit in everywhere. And I was like, oh, my God, this is me, you know? This is me.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And, you know, she might have tapped into something. Who knows? You
uh-huh.
know, I definitely am not going to disclaim anything anybody else sees.
Right.
Because. That would make me a big old hypocrite.
Right.
Know?
Well, maybe it was my really hot palms. I don't know.
Yes,
maybe I was sweating a little bit too much. My palms were too sweaty. It's like, oh, my
your
gosh.
Palms probably
palms
really
sweaty.
Hairy, too.
My palms were hairy. Yeah. We know why that happened. But anyhow. So, Crystal, seriously, though. Here's something I find very, very fascinating I guess you said you were raised in a pagan family. I mean, okay, pagan
uh-huh.
means a lot of weird things to people, and I've seen on
it's
one of your websites where you mentioned you were, you know, a witch. You are a witch, or I mean,
yeah,
and of course, there's all kinds of preconceptions about
a
witch.
I will put out there. Was
okay.
definitely not raised in a Wiccan family.
Okay,
I am
not Wiccan.
Wiccan.
Okay, there's a thing.
No.
Wiccan and
no.
pagan,
no.
there's a big
yeah.
difference. correct?
There is a huge difference.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Please elaborate, because
it's just a general term for people to help people understand that I wasn't raised Christian. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
For myself, personally, I hate labels. Because for me, names hold power.
Mm-hmm.
So it can get tricky. You know what I mean? In what you label yourself. But if I was going to label myself anything as far as my spirituality goes, I would be a witch.
Okay. Okay.
Yes, I do believe I believe that it takes a male and a female to create life on Earth, be it a plant, be it animals. You know what I mean? It takes a male and a female. So why would our universe be any different? But I don't think one is either more important than the other, and I think that collectively they are one being, or they're two parts of one being, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does.
And that's why I connect with nature more, because, I mean, the earth is my mother. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
She's nurtured me my whole life. Came from her, I'm going to return to her. There's just so much of her that I connect with. And when I connect with her, I connect with her like I would a mother. You know, when I'm sad, I turn to her. When I'm, you know, when I need to be loved, I turn to her. When I need to vent, I turn to her. When I need strength, I turn to him, just like I would a dad. You know what I mean?
Right.
When I'm scared, I turn to him, because I need to be protected. I don't put names on them. It's pretty much, that's my mom, that's my dad, you know?
Right.
Yeah, and that works for me personally. So I don't really, I'm not an eclectic anything, you know? I'm just me, and my spirituality is very nature-based. So when I say pagan, I mean it's very nature-based. There's no Christianity, no Christian mythology in it whatsoever.
All right. Yeah, because, I think a lot of people, you know, they have some preconceptions about paganism and you know, being a witch.
That comes to mind. Yeah, I don't sacrifice babies every other Wednesday.
What's that? I'm sorry?
I said I don't sacrifice babies every other Wednesday. No, I do not.
And why not?
Yeah, why not? My God, wouldn't it, enhance your career?
No, I do not.
No, I'm just
really
kidding.
Cool. And once again, I'd be much richer than I am right now.
Right, exactly. All right. No, but
my
seriously.
My spirituality is very serious for me, and it's nothing like the TV show Charmed. And I really wish it was, because I could just pencil my nose and my house would be a lot cleaner than it is right now. But apparently my nose is broken, because it doesn't work.
Your nose is bewitched. Bewitched.
Yeah, it doesn't work. I have to actually wash my dishes.
Yeah, you know, I think we all wish we had the whole bewitched, wiggle your nose thing and everything. Is just.
Oh, wouldn't that be cool?
It would.
That'd be awesome.
I wish I had that power. I wish I had the force, Luke Skywalker
exactly.
And Darth Vader.
There you go.
But
exactly.
Yeah, no, seriously. No, I'm not
I mean,
trying to make fun
I
of you.
Doesn't make me what I am.
Uh-huh.
It makes me who I am.
Right. And when you mention or call yourself a witch, I mean, everyone has this horrible Halloween-esque preconception of, you know, what a witch is, you know what I mean? They think, you know, the green face with the, you know, the little, pseudo,
yeah,
Abraham Lincoln hat that's pointy and, you know, I mean.
Big wart on the side of the nose. Yeah. Yeah, we didn't come out really good through history, did we?
Well, and then, you had the whole Salem witch trials at the same time, but,
Those weren't even witches.
Nope, that was just some sort of weird conspiracy going on there, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that just kind of sucks. But, yeah no. And you know, that's a word that I use. Do I believe in magic? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Same as anybody else would believe in miracles. But
right.
Remember when I said energy was tangible?
Yes.
Well, so is my laptop, and I can move my laptop.
Right.
That energy that I feel that's tangible.
Uh huh.
It can be moved too.
Right. And right. And you know, I have felt, you know, like I've mentioned to you, I have felt weird, you know, events where I feel like, you know, something that's not there is touching me and all that, and it's just it's weird. And it's strange to me. And, you know, at the same time, I would like to also ask you about, I guess you are a paranormal investigator.
Yes.
What's that all about? Yeah. I would love to hear about that.
Yes, I love it.
Okay.
I love it. I absolutely love to go to a place that's been haunted and not just rely on being able to feel them. Although that's going to kick in regardless. If there's something there, I'm going to know it. But it's more exciting to me, because to me that's not exciting. To me that's like an everyday thing. You know what I mean? I could tap into that anytime I want to.
Yeah.
But what's even more exciting to me is to take technology in with me.
Oh, so you
and
do.
And actually see the communication between the spirits. To actually see and hear, to actually hear them speaking in real time and having a conversation with them through an ovulus or a spirit box. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that. You know? It's so exciting to me.
Okay.
To be able to hear
what they have to say.
I mean, we can learn so much from them. They were here for a long time before we were.
Right.
You know?
Okay, well, okay. See, I'm very fascinated by
I love it.
Well, I'm very fascinated by this because, you know, of course, you know, I have to admit, I've watched some of those paranormal investigator shows on TV, on reality shows. I don't know how much of that is real and how much of that is made up, but I am fascinated by it, and my daughter is too. My daughter, she is very much into that stuff, and she thinks it's really cool. So you just mentioned something. What were the devices you mentioned? I mean, do you have like actual like electronic devices to help you with this paranormal investigation?
Many tools that you can use for paranormal investigating. You can use the spirit box, which is like a hack shot, like a AM/FM radio that's been hacked, and you listen to them talking through the white noise. Does that make sense to you?
White noise. Yeah. Okay.
And there's also an ovulus that you can hear them actually speaking to you also. There is an EMF reader. Those are fun. And it's pretty much, you know, the electric magnetic field is what changes, and so it'll give a reading. And depending on the device you're using, it'll either light up, or some of them will light up, but it'll also have a meter going up, letting you know that the energy's changed, which usually indicates that there's a spirit there, you know. Let's see, there are divining rods that you can use. Some paranormal
divining
investigators
rods, yeah.
don't like the rods, but I love them.
Okay.
Because in the paranormal world of investigations, as silly as this is going to sound, there's a division.
Mm-hmm. Really? A division within the whole...
It's an oxymoron, but there is a big division. Some paranormal investigators refuse to work with psychics. They will only work with scientific tools. And then there's some teams that like both. For me, I'm all about balance. I'm all about balance in everything in my life. So why would my investigating be any different, right?
So
I like to have both. I like to open myself up and be able to feel what's in the room. But then again, when I'm not alone, I like to have evidence scientific evidence to back up what I'm feeling for everybody else that's in the room. I don't need it for myself. I don't need validation for myself. I know what I hear. I know what I see. You know, I don't have anything to prove. But when there's other people in the room, it's really rewarding to see anything that I've said validated through scientific methods. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And the equipment that you use, that's all scientific. I mean, that's all scientific evidence. So you can get use an EVP recorder, and you can get recordings of the spirits talking, which is really fun. A lot of times you don't hear it in the real time. So we usually do it. I was taught to do it in 2-minute intervals. So we will only record for 2 minutes, and then we stop and play it back to see if we caught anything. And there are times when you catch things that you didn't hear when you were doing the investigation, that you'll catch on the EVP recording. Digital photography is the same way. There are times that you'll take pictures. We always take 2 pictures of the same thing. And there's times when one of the pictures will change from the other picture that you took simultaneously. So it's really kind of cool when you get into the scientific aspect of paranormal investigating. I love both.
Okay, I have to ask, where are some of the sites you have been to, that are haunted? Any sites that people would know about or be familiar with?
Sure. My very favorite place is the Queen Mary. That place is so fun. It is so overloaded with spirits. It's not even
Queen Mary?
Funny.
Oh,
like,
please explain and elaborate for people who are listening who might not be familiar. What's the Queen Mary?
Okay, the Queen Mary is a ship in Long Beach that is permanently docked. It's had many different uses, but it's docked in Long Beach now, and they have restaurants in there. They have hotel in there, which is amazing. And then they also have places where you can hold conventions. I went there for Cairo Caravan, Metco's Cairo Caravan, which is a big belly dance festival that's put on every year. And me and Princess Farhana, we led a belly dancing ghost paranormal investigative tour on Friday night for the belly dance festival, which was a hoot when you have a bunch of belly dancers together.
That's something we're coming up to next after we get through all this scary paranormal stuff is belly dancing. Yeah, that's a whole other subject. But yeah, please keep telling us about this particular
haunted. We investigated the Queen Mary, and it was amazing. They had so many spirits that came out. I did a workshop on paranormal investigating there, just one of the free lectures that we like to do for the belly dancers, and I was just showing the ovulus to them, and I said, and then you can turn it on right here, and then I put it down, and I didn't turn it off. I just put it down, and then I continued giving my lecture, and about 20 minutes into the lecture, this man starts talking to us through here, so I stopped talking, and I start talking to him, because it's kind of rude when somebody's trying to talk to you to just kind of ignore them, you know, so I started talking to him. And I asked him if he liked all of the belly dancers, were walking around. He said, no. And I said, really? I said, you don't like the dancers? And he said, no. They're loud and weird. I thought that was cool.
Wow.
Yeah. So... by far, the Queen Mary is my favorite place, but I also really liked the Suicide Bridge in
Suicide
Pasadena.
Bridge? Uh-oh. Okay. Wow, that just sounds creepy.
That sounds intense.
Where is the Suicide Bridge, and please tell us about that.
The Suicide Bridge is in Pasadena, California.
Uh-huh.
And it's this beautiful bridge. It really is beautiful until you go underneath of it, and then it gets a little dark, but... up on top of it, it's absolutely beautiful, but they've had to put rails up. Even to this day, they average one jumper a month. Hundreds of people have jumped off the bridge. Yes, since
wow,
it was built.
That's, That's creepy. Just
yes.
My God. Okay, yeah, that's got to be
underneath where the bodies would have landed. It gets really dark and spooky under there.
Yeah.
Yeah. The energy, and I really think that that's what it is. It's the energy of, you know, just the sadness and desperation of all the people. I think that might have been what I was tapping into, but, yeah, it got really ugly.
Well, explain how to get ugly. What was that experience like? How was that whole investigation?
You know,
which tools did you use? Did you use the spirit box or an electromagnet, you know?
I used everything. I used the spirit box. Well, actually, I used an ovulus. I prefer an ovulus over a spirit box.
Really? Why is that?
Loud, and some of the noises can really grate on my nerves, so I don't really watch. But I used my divining rods. I use that whenever I feel something. I want to have a conversation with them, because you can ask them yes and no questions, and you can actually communicate with them. So I definitely had my spirit rods with me. I had an EVP recorder, which we caught a couple of really interesting recordings on. We had our digital cameras, and we were actually using a video camera at the same time also. But, you know, we connected with a couple up on top that were pretty easy to talk to, but it was down underneath where it got ugly. When I mean it got uncomfortable for me, you have to remember that I'm open to feeling what the spirits are feeling. And what I totally believe is that, you know, when you're outside and it's dark, there's no stars in the sky, no moon, no lights, it's just dark.
Right.
And then it gets darker.
For no reason.
For no reason, it just all of a sudden, and nothing
happens.
That's
creepy. All right.
Yeah. And so, and right away I just felt sick to my stomach. I got a bad headache. Felt a little dizzy. It was just, I think it was just too much. You know, I was like, whoa, I need to take a time out here, you know. And
that bad, really? Seriously?
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely.
Physical, like.
On my butt.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah. So, and what I think is it was just you know, like a thumbprint? Your thumb really isn't there, but the print of it is.
Right.
Mm. All the emotions of people who have taken their own lives on that bridge have left their thumbprint there. That mark.
Right.
And I think that was what I was feeling. I don't think it was actually them. I think it was what they were feeling at the time.
Uh-huh.
That's the best way I can explain it.
Well, no, that makes sense to me. But, I can get that. But do you think, and this is what makes me sad, and I don't like to imagine, is you don't think those spirits, since they took their lives there, are trapped there forever, do you? I mean,
some
what?
Are.
You
some,
think so?
Well, and
really?
And here's where you're going to get into a lot of different opinions. But I'll be happy to give you my opinion. And my opinion is that when you take your own life, you get caught in this guilt because of the reason, because of who you left behind, because of what they've had to go through, because of your decision. You know what I mean? And until you can have some accountability and let it go, then you are kind of trapped there. And I'm not saying that they're going to be trapped there forever. Because they won't. If they can let go of that shame, let go of that guilt, and I truly believe that they can move on. Why not? You know, maybe they can come back again and do it right the next time, or maybe that was their lesson. Who knows? You know what I mean? But I do think that they've got to let go of the guilt and shame that they feel still, in order to be able to move on and be able to leave. And, yeah, it is very sad.
It is sad. And, you know, we bring up some excellent points here. So the people, like you said, you feel like some kind of get trapped in that. And does that mean they're kind of their souls or spirits are kind of trapped in, like, some form of purgatory or whatnot?
I don't think it's purgatory in a dogmatic manner. I mean, I don't think they're being judged.
Yeah.
I think it's a personal thing.
It's the same as here.
If we're living in shame, even when our souls are in its body, in this vehicle that we're walking around with while we're having our earth experience, when we feel shame and when we feel guilt over something, until we work through it, we carry that with us, and it's toxic, and it affects absolutely everything we do. We're almost trapped in that issue, whatever it might be, until we learn to let go, and then we can move on, and it has it doesn't have the same effect on us anymore as it does when we're holding on to it so tight.
Mm-hmm.
I think that when you take your own life, you hold on to that pain and that shame and that guilt almost like a security blanket.
Wow.
And
okay.
Until you can let it go, that's where you're going to stay. I don't think it's a punishment, not from anybody else other than yourself. I think it's something you've got to work through.
And
I think it can. I think you can work through it. And I think especially when you have somebody else helping you.
Right. You also kind of brought something else up with your statement a few minutes ago. It almost sounds like do you have some sort of belief in reincarnation? You said you can better yourself. You believe in reincarnation? Because that's something my mom brought me up to believe in, reincarnation.
I'll tell you what, my daughter was a twin, okay?
Uh-huh.
And her sister didn't make it.
Oh,
but
wow.
She's always had a connection with her whole life.
Uh-huh.
And when Angel was about 7, we were driving down the road, and she said, "Mom, when am I going to see my other mom and dad?" And I said, "What other mom and dad?" She goes, "The ones I was with before I lived with you, you know, the ones I got in the car accident with."
What?
Yeah.
That just gave me chills.
You.
Are you serious?
Thank you. There's no other way of explaining it.
Uh-huh.
There's no other way of explaining it.
How
was
old was she when she said that?
She was about five. I mean,
yeah.
She was so young.
Yeah, five-year-olds don't just make stuff up like that out of nowhere. Wow.
When Angel was three, she was about four, I walked into the room.
Uh-huh.
And, hold on, I'm running out of battery, so I have to change phones.
That's okay. We can put on some fun music for just a moment. Or I can talk to Mr. Gasinski.
Hello.
You're back. Okay.
Sorry about that. Technical difficulty. I walked into her room. I think she was about four. I walked into her room, and she was talking to herself. And it was like I could feel instantly that she wasn't by herself. I don't know if it was because I'm the mom or what, but I didn't know right away who it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "Angelina, who are you talking to, baby?" And she said, "Well, Mom, my sister." And she pointed right by her. Now, I'd never told her she had one.
Yeah. Huh.
You know, so when things like that happen, you don't question it. You just simply figure out how to make her, you know, I definitely didn't tell her anything other than I just like, okay, you know.
Right. a kid that young, you try to comfort them and like, okay.
That's it. I don't ever tell her anything isn't real because I've learned through many experiences that statement is very naive when you say something isn't real.
Right.
Because a lot of things that other people were taught aren't real. And so when you're told that by so many people, then, well, of course, that must be true. So you stop believing in it. Just because you don't believe in it doesn't make it so.
Mm, very good point.
And I absolutely believe in reincarnation. I believe that we come back here as many times as we have to until we've learned everything we need to. And then we just continue on our journey, and I don't think it stops here. I think when we go to the spirit world, we have things there that we need to learn, too, to keep for our spirit to continue on its journey. until it's learned everything it needs to. And at that point in time, I think it just finds peace, whatever that is.
Yeah, exactly. Where do we find that? I mean, where does it end? Where do you find, you know, that peace, that nirvana or whatnot? But so do you think, okay, here's my connection with that sense of deja vu and reincarnation. Have you ever thought that maybe, you know, that weird sense of deja vu or anything has something to do with being reincarnated and having existed before or having gone
Absolutely.
Through something? Yeah? Okay.
Yes.
How so?
Well, haven't you ever met anybody and you know that you know them?
Yes.
And they feel the
Absolutely,
same.
Yes.
Like
that instant
before.
Connection, yep.
Yes. I believe it's because you did have an experience, whether it was a big one or a small one.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it was just in a previous life, and you just remembered.
Hmm.
You know, not as in, oh, I remember in 1842 when we met
right.
Mercantile in town on Saturday for the dance, you know.
right. I realize it's not that specific or ridiculous, but yeah, I see what you're saying.
There's not a glitch in the Matrix?
You know what? The Matrix movie freaked me out because what if that was real?
Yeah, seriously.
Maybe we
After
are all computer
generated. After seeing the things that I've seen in my life, that show freaked me out more so than most other shows.
Really? Wow.
Absolutely.
That's kind of that's interesting to hear from someone who, you know, who's a psychic and, you know, paranormal investigator that the Matrix freaks you out that much. Can you elaborate on that just a little bit? Because that's kind of, you know, that's fascinating within itself, you know.
Because, I mean, as important as my spirituality is to me, wouldn't it freak you out if this was all just, like, made up? And we're going to wake up to some other alternative.
I think a lot of us have had those weird experiences and wondered.
Yeah.
What if,
but that's
yeah,
kind
what
of
if,
freaky if you ask me.
Everything
yeah,
is
that freaked
fake.
Me out.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, hell no. You know what freaked me out, too, was on Men in Black. At the very end when he opens the locker and they were go, you know, calling him his god and everything, and then the other guy tells him how naive he is, and he goes and opens up the door, and there's the locker. Brilliant. That was brilliant. Okay, I'm a geek. I get it.
No, you're not a geek. Not at all, no.
I don't know. I think about things like that.
Well, you know, I think more people than you realize have weird thoughts like this, and they try to make sense and rationalize or whatever. You know, a lot of us try to make sense. That's all part of life. Like, we all try to make sense of why we are here. Why we exist.
Exactly.
What's going on. And, you know.
The unknown. Because in truth, this is just simply how I believe. None of us know for sure what happens after we pass.
Right.
I know that somehow we can come back because I've seen spirits. I feel them. I've talked to them. And I've had many experiences with them. So I know spirits are real. That I don't even question. But what happens, you know, at the end of the journey?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody knows. Nobody can say for sure. You know what I mean? For all we know, we do wake up somewhere with a shaved head and a cord sticking out the back of it. Who knows, you know?
Funny you say that because I wake up with a shaved head half the time. I'm just kind of a freak like that. But
yeah, who knows? And I don't think that that's the point. I think when we try to rationalize what we don't know, you know, there's a lot of theories that can come up. Some of them brilliant, like the Matrix, you know, and it'll make people think because when you get really honest with yourself, we don't know.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I get it. I get it.
And that's what's so exciting about it. That's what's so exciting about spirituality and, you know, is that we don't know.
Right.
You know, we're on this personal path of you know, finding some comfort, some serenity,
comfort.
Some enchantment in our lives, and that's it.
Yeah, I agree. You know, like I said, I grew up in a very strange kind of, like, environment and household where, you know, like, my dad, strict atheist. When you're dead, you become worm food, you know, that's it, you know. And then my mom, much like you, very spiritual, very into reincarnation, spirituality, you know, everything else, tarot cards. And all. I remember having, like, tarot card, like, books and everything and learning about it. And you know, that's something else I would really like to hear, you know, about more about your, you know, this book coming out you have, and what's that process like? I mean, apparently you have some sort of artistic talents if you're creating, you know, a tarot card deck. I mean,
well,
that's...
I'm creating the idea that they're going to look like with all the symbolisms that's needed for each card. But
mm-hmm.
this is a collaboration going on.
Oh, okay.
Maharet Hughes is going to be the artist on the project. And she's an amazing graphic artist and an amazing photographer.
Okay.
Who just happens to also be drop-dead beautiful and an amazing dancer. And we've all connected through our belly dance.
And there we go. A beautiful
yes.
segue to the belly dancing. Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely. And the deck itself will be, you know, it's inspired by dance.
Uh-huh.
So I have some wonderful dancers who are going to be helping by posing and representing a suit. Christina Nestia, who is a, you know, world-known burlesque dancer and contortionist.
Okay.
Princess Rahana, who needs no introduction. You know, she's royal fabulous.
yeah, I'm familiar with her, yes.
Hughes. Pardon?
I'm familiar with, Princess. Yes.
Princess Rahana. Everybody's familiar with Princess Rahana. She's fabulous. She is
one of the most
exciting women in the world.
Also,
you know, and then me.
Uh-huh.
I'm writing the book, and it'll be my ideas for the cards, but these, I couldn't do it without those three beautiful women,
uh-huh.
you know, being on my team. So.
Right.
I'm very excited about it. The book will go hand in hand with the deck. Neither one will stand alone. They go together, you know. But there's no point in getting a tarot deck if you don't know how to read them.
Right.
So that's what the book is for. The book is to explain what the tarot is,
mm-hmm.
Big picture, to take you on the journey of the Fool, which kind of helps you to understand the 22 cards that are in the Major Arcana. And then the Minor Arcana, which has 56 cards in it. And, you know, when I say Minor Arcana, they are by no means minor. The Major Arcana, I believe, is the heart of the tarot deck, though. So, but the Minor Arcana is the four suits, kind of like your playing cards. You would have, spades, clubs, hearts, and diamonds. It's the same in the Minor Arcana, only you would have suits that are represented with its corresponding element, like you would have discs or pentacles, sacred circles, depending on the deck, which corresponds with the element of Earth. So the meaning behind them would be like prosperity, stability, you know, groundedness, materialization. Anything that is earthy that you can think of would be represented by that deck. So you see how that works?
Right.
Are you totally, did I totally just go over your head?
Well, no, I'm familiar. I mean, I know what you're talking about. I mean, I have a general idea and familiarity with it all. It's just, as far as, you know, you start talking about very specific things. Yeah, it's like, I don't quite get that.
I can't help myself.
But that's okay, because, you know, that's what we have you on here for, to learn
exactly.
all about it.
Exactly. And that's what the book's all about, is the book kind of helps break it down. And then it'll break down each one of the major arcana cards, you know, through the Fool's journey, so that you can understand what each card stands for, all the symbolism
mm-hmm.
on the card, what it stands for, you know, and so forth. Same with the minor arcana.
Right.
But I'm the most excited about the deck itself. Being a tarot reader, I absolutely love tarot decks, everything about them. I love different ones. Now, when I do a reading, I have read the same cards for over 20 years. I'm kind of partial to them. Poor things are old and falling apart.
Oh, my gosh. So are you going to...
in the same cloth.
And I've always heard, here's something I always heard, is you don't let anyone else, shuffle or touch your, you know what I mean,
okay.
Your deck.
Is that true?
Is that
now, I
sort
do.
Of... I'm sorry?
No, that depends on the reader, because I do. I can tap into their energy a little bit more if they do shuffle my card.
Uh-huh.
Now, I am particular, and I'll tell them, you know, no funnel shuffling because it ruins my card.
Huh.
But them to shuffle it. And I want them to think about what they need, you know, what they want
mm-hmm.
the reading to tell them while they're shuffling them. I do not have people ask me a question. You know, I don't have people, you know, I don't say, okay, what is it you want the cards to tell you and have them tell me, is my husband cheating on me? You know what I mean?
Yes, I've heard that. I've seen that, yes. Wow. So you've had people say that to you or whatnot?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? And how'd that turn out? I mean, what was your reaction? How do you react to that?
Well, okay, I've been doing this a long time.
Uh-huh.
So normally I tell them, you know what, the cards are going to tell us what, you know, not necessarily what you want to know, but what you need to know. And because, I mean, that's
good
the truth.
Babe, yeah.
You know what I mean? And right. I just let them know, you know, let's just do your reading. Because like that's why I don't like having to ask them a question. What
mm-hmm.
I like is for them to not say anything to me. I don't... The more I know about them, for me, because I really am reading and
uh-huh.
I really am tapping into their energy, if they say anything, it throws me off.
Hmm.
I don't need any help. I don't need any telltale signs. I don't need to, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. I know exactly.
And when you have to ask a question, if your reader has to ask you a question, that's a bad way of putting it. The reader should not.
No. I think I know where you're going. If you don't mind me interjecting, is I know many people who are skeptical, about the whole, you know, scene or whatnot, and, you know, readers and psychics and, you know, tarot card readers or whatnot. They, you know, I've heard that, you know, they ask you questions and they work off of that and they use it. They're kind of like a shyster of some sort, you know, a hustler. It's like, oh,
absolutely.
Okay. So,
absolutely.
So, all right.
I would prefer they don't say anything about about the reading. You know, I mean, when they come in, of course, I'm going to be like, hi, how are you? How are you doing? You know, go ahead and sit down. And then I kind of tell them a little bit what I'm going to do, I'm going to be laying a spread out. I'm going to be, you know, because it can be a little scary. So for me, that's just my way of kind of easing into it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I do ask them, is there anything, you know, I'm going to see probably more than you realize. Is there anything
really?
You
tell them that?
Talk about? Oh, absolutely.
And how do they normally react?
And I maintain eye contact when I tell them that too, because I need them to understand. And I've never had anyone turn away because of that. But I also ask them, is there anything you don't want to know? Is there anything you don't want to talk about? Some things you just aren't willing to talk to a stranger about. You know
right.
what I mean?
Well, and what's the typical reaction to that?
Yeah.
The typical reaction is, no, anything that comes up, let's talk. Let's get it all out on the board. You know what I mean? and I'm
wow.
like, okay, you know. But there are some who are like, yeah, I don't want to talk about my childhood. Okay. And so we don't.
No.
Because the reading's not for me. It's not important that they understand what I see. You know what I mean?
Right. Right.
It's
no, like, I get it. I get
the reading,
it.
Yeah, the reading's for them. So if they don't want to talk
right.
about something, it's not up to me to force it on them. That's not my job. That's not what I do. My job is to help them on their journey and give them whatever guidance that I can offer to help them along their journey, and that's it. That's where it ends. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I really try and keep that in mind whenever I am doing a reading, you know, especially if something comes up that I really want to put out there. I have to check my motive. You know, if they said they don't want to talk about their childhood, then what is my motive about really, really wanting to talk about what I saw? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, and I don't. There should be no motive other than helping them. If they said they don't want to talk about it, then we're not talking about it. That's all there is to
it. So, I mean, the way you're describing this to me, I mean, do you almost feel like this is, I don't know, almost therapeutic for the people that you do these readings for?
It absolutely is.
Yeah, okay.
At least for me. At least with my clients.
I'm sure it is for the...
Yeah, I've never had anybody come to me because mine are by appointment only. So I've never had anybody come to me because they just wanted to have a reading. It was one of those giggly girl kind of things. You know what I mean?
Right.
But that you get a psychic fair. I've never had that. When people come to me, I'm the in-house tarot reader at the Cosmic Corral in Hanford, and it's a fabulous place. I have my own reading room.
Well, tell us more about that. Yeah.
I love the Cosmic Corral. Tom and Joy are the owners, and they are the most loving spiritual people I have ever had the privilege of meeting, and they are so welcoming to anybody who wants to come in and experience, not even just learn. I give lectures there all the time on many different topics, and I do I do clairvoyant readings there. I do tarot readings there. I do healing sessions there, where I do journeys to collect lost soul pieces. So I do a whole bunch of things there, and I'm not the only one. There's a lot of really great people that commune there and work there and give lectures there. But they have a beautiful reading room. It's very, very small, very intimate, very comforting. It's got a door that you can close, and I'm by appointment only. So I've never had anybody come in for a reading that wasn't looking for guidance, you know?
Right.
For me, yes, it is very therapeutic. It is, especially when you let them know that there's light at the end of the tunnel, because sometimes that's all they need to hear. You know, sometimes it doesn't take a big mystical spiritual awakening or a big, you know, a big story from a tarot reader. Sometimes they just need to hear someone say, you know what, it's all right. You're gonna get through.
You're right. You're right. Honestly, you're providing a service for people, you know, who just need that sense of comfort, I guess. I'm not trying to simplify it or anything, but, you know, I know exactly what you're saying. Yeah, I mean, that's...
But I do not offer hugs.
You what?
No, I do not offer hugs, though. That is not on the table.
Wait a second, I got confused. You do not offer what?
I do not snuggle with them.
No, oh, you don't snuggle.
No snuggling.
Oh, crap. So you heard us talking about this whole chick from Portland. That's funny, right?
Nope.
That's Samantha Hess.
Offer services. Snuggling is not one of them.
Wow, you threw me for a loop there. You caught me off guard. That was a good one. Not many guests do that to me. Wow, good one. Okay. Shoot. All right, I'm going to have to stop Googling here. Yeah, get serious again. Wow, you threw me for a loop. All right, you got me there. That was a good one.
So now you're a belly dancer, too. How much
is
the belly dancing
spiritual? Let's segue on to the whole belly dancing there. That's
okay, which is my favorite subject.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, here we go.
Too?
Wow.
I mean,
yes, because as you can tell, getting me to talk is really hard. So it's a good thing we're moving on to a subject that I really like.
All right, here we go.
I absolutely love belly dancing. It changed my life. It gave me wings and taught me to fly, and I've been flying ever since. So I love belly dance. I'm a classical Egyptian dancer and a modern Egyptian dancer because really nothing is classic anymore. You know, art is subjective and it evolves, and belly dance is no different. But I dance under the direction of Anda Lee, who is amazing. She's like the Grace Kelly of belly dance, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she really is amazing. And she actually lives in Clovis. So I understand that
nice.
she lived in Clovis at one time. I dance with her on her troupe, which is the Eastern Sun Dance Company. I've been with them for 7 or 8 years now. And I'm a member of, excuse me, I'm a member of the Belly Dance Coalition of the San Joaquin Valley.
Wow.
And our belly dance community is amazing in the Central Valley. It really is. And it's growing every single day, which is exciting to watch and be a part of. But I became a soloist about 3 years ago when I started teaching for Anda Lee. And it's amazing. I think I was born for the stage. Because
really?
When I'm on stage, when I'm on stage, I can be anybody I want to be. You know? It's just like I'm not breathing and I'm not living in any unless I'm on that stage. And then it's like everything comes alive. Colors are brighter. My smile's bigger.
Yeah. Do you guys do events? I mean, what kind of stage?
We do. Well, you know, I teach workshops. So I travel all up and down the West Coast teaching workshops and doing large performances. But in the Central Valley, the Belly Dance Coalition of the Central Valley puts on a show in Fresno's Rogue Show. So I don't know, when you lived in Clovis, did you hear about the Rogue Festival that goes on in the Tower District?
Yeah, I believe so. That's the big art thing they do once a year?
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
Well, we have a show in that. It's the His Ya Wiz show, and every year it's got a different theme. This year's theme is Fire and Ice, and I'm really excited about it because this year you have to audition.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm not used to having to audition, at least in the Central Valley. It's usually just a given, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
So I'm really nervous for the first time in years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I have a really cool idea of what I'm going to be doing, and auditions are due on the 29th of November, so I'm a little bit in freak-out mode over that, but I think it's going to be great. But, yeah, it's a great festival that goes on every year, and there's different shows, different venues, any kind of performing arts you can think of as being done at the Rogue Festival. We're really honored to be a part of it.
Yeah, I remember it was a lot of fun, you know. It's a good thing for that city, you know, especially the Tower District, to have some kind of arts other than the art hop that they do.
Right. Well, and if you think about it, the art hop is more for artists, as in like photography and painting, drawing, and illustrations. You know what I mean?
Right.
To where,
there's many people who live in that city. There's
art.
Not a lot. There's not a lot going on for other kinds of artists in that city.
It's really not. And you know, it's been going on forever. You know, it goes on, I think it starts like February 27th and runs until March 7th or something like that. And there's just all through the Tower District, there are different shows going on all night long at all different venues. So it's quite amazing. I mean, you can take in, show at one place and then walk down the street and take in a show at another, and then walk down the street and take in a show at another. And a lot of people do that pretty much the whole time the festival's going on, so it's really exciting.
Right on.
Yeah. other than that, I travel around and dance at a lot of festivals, teach at a lot of festivals.
Right. Well, as far as teaching and stuff, I mean, please, you know, tell us more about that. I mean,
I do teach regular classes. I teach a beginning belly dance fundamental class for Annalise Academy of Belly Dance at the Cosmic Corral every Tuesday night. And then I also teach a choreography class every Tuesday night.
Oh, choreography. Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really fun. And
what's the difference between, like... what's the difference between, like, doing, you know, choreography class and, you know, a beginner's class? I mean, what exactly does that entail between the two? I mean, what's the difference?
There's a big difference because... before you can do the moves in a choreography, you kind of have to learn how to do the moves. So the beginning belly dance fundamentals class is teaching you how to do the moves, how to get your body to move the way it needs to move, you know, what muscles to use, how to have a proper stance. Not only that, but the rhythms. There are so many different rhythms that we dance to, and each one has a name. And you need to know those rhythms. And you also start learning the culture, you know, the history.
Mm-hmm.
You start being introduced to the music. You can't just jump into a choreography class because the choreography class, you're actually learning a choreography. You need to know how to dance before you can take a choreography class.
Wow. Okay. Well, I mean,
dancing. You're not going to know what I'm talking about.
No. I mean, earlier you mentioned something about Egyptian or whatnot and different types of or styles of belly dancing. It's like, my God, you know, I mean, I didn't know there was that many different distinctions between types or styles or genres, if I dare say, of belly dancing. I mean, what?
there's so many. I mean, you're talking about probably, and don't quote me on this, but probably the oldest form of dance that we have on the planet, you know.
Really?
Absolutely. It's been around forever, maybe not in the United States, but it didn't originate here. We're borrowing from someone else when we dance here.
Mm-hmm.
Because we were taught, right? We were taught how, but we were taught how by people from there. which will bring, okay, you've got your Egyptian dancing, which of course comes from Egypt.
Right.
And the surrounding areas, right?
Uh-huh.
But you can also got Turkish. Guess where that comes from?
That big old, like...
Think real hard.
That big old country that sounds a lot like something we celebrate for Thanksgiving, but yeah. No.
Exactly.
No, but seriously. I'm fascinated by the distinction. Yeah. Okay. Keep going. Yeah. So we got.
You've got American cabaret. Now that's when it gets.
Oh,
really
American
fun.
Cabaret. Are you serious?
Yeah.
There is an American cabaret distinction for belly dancing.
Oh, absolutely.
Really?
There is.
That's completely.
Because these women.
I could see Turkish and Egyptian. Oh my gosh.
Oh,
okay.
No. These fabulous women,
they were
dancing in restaurants back in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah.
And they were being taught by the immigrants who missed their home. And so they taught these women how they danced at home. And these fabulous men and women, I should say, I shouldn't just give all the credit to the women because there were some fabulous men too. But they then passed it on to us. So it was basically born here, a lot of the styles that they have, you know. And then there were some early, you know, legendary dancers like, you know, Jamila Salimpour and Helena Vlahos, who's one of my favorites, you know, who danced here. And there's a very big distinction on between American cabaret and, say, Egyptian.
Wow.
The veil,
I had no idea.
The veil would be, absolutely. The veil would be a big one. I mean, you know, in Egyptian dance, we don't wrap our veil. They do.
Uh-huh.
And it's absolutely stunning. It's beautiful to watch. We have a beautiful American cabaret dancer and teacher in the Central Valley, Corey Zamora, who has been around since then. And she's amazing. So, you know, there are distinctions. And then you have your American Tribal, which is
American
a whole other story.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. See, I had no idea there was this many different styles and genres or distinctions.
You're
That's
amazed.
Fascinating.
And then you have,
okay.
of course, your Tribal Fusion, which gets even more amazing, you know. So
Wow. There's
a plethora of styles of belly dance to choose from, and each and every one of them are just as amazing as the one before. So it really is a beautiful art that I really hope the mainstream or the general public can grab a hold of and see how beautiful it is. Unfortunately, you know, we do get looked at as less than in the dancer's arena, you know, a lot of
right,
people.
Right, right. It does. You know, I know what you're saying. I hate the fact that it gets kind of like, okay, you're strippers, you're burlesque dancers.
Yeah.
You know, it does. It gets thrown into that whole category.
And
I know what you're saying, but it's different.
It couldn't be more different. Not that I think stripping is bad, you know.
Right, right. No, and I'm not saying that, but I understand what you're saying.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. It's a beautiful art form.
Uh-huh.
It's got so many amazing, you know, changes that it can make. I mean, just within Egyptian dance alone, that you can go into the folkloric avenue. You can see the Saidi dances. You can see the Kaliji dancers. You can see, I mean, there's just so much there that people are missing out of that I would really encourage any friend from the general public who sees a belly dance show being advertised, go see it because it'll be amazing. Take your kids. Take your kids and go see it.
I agree.
It'll be amazing.
Absolutely. It's amazing. There's, you know, an aesthetic point to it. And you know what? And, you know, it is sensual to a, you know, certain degree. There is something sensual about it and something, you know, erotic, I mean, to a degree, and, you know, and beautiful.
Beautiful,
just like any art. Like, you see a painting, and you're like, oh, wow, this is beautiful and kind of erotic and kind of hot, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
but
there is.
Like,
and, then, you know, there's
woman.
Nothing wrong with
just
that.
Like any woman. When a woman walks by, there's something erotic about that, just because she's a woman. I mean, seriously.
Oh, no, I get it.
Yeah.
Do you ever see any erotic guys walking by?
Only when I'm in Hollywood.
Only when you're in Hollywood. Oh, wow.
Good answer.
Good answer. That's great. Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, the show, wow, here we are. We've got like 5 minutes left, guys. This has been great. And I know, this has been great. This is, my gosh. It has. You have been. Absolutely. We have to have you on again, Crystal. I swear.
Anytime.
Yeah, very fascinating. Great stuff. And, you know, especially when this whole book coming out that you're collaborating, you know, with these other artists and stuff, you know, regarding the whole tarot card stuff. I mean, you need to be back on and get on here and talk to us about
that.
Absolutely.
If somebody wants to look you up or follow you, what's your website or Facebook or something like that?
You can get a hold of me on Facebook, www.facebook.com/officialcrystalravenwolf. Come like my page.
Okay.
Keep up on my shenanigans.
Your shenanigans.
Keep up on the adventures of Crystal.
Sounds like
you
fun.
Have so much going
I'm definitely
on,
gonna
you know?
Do it.
And I'm not done yet. World domination, baby. That's my goal.
World domination, absolutely.
You're working at it.
I'm gonna build my own matrix.
That's great. All right. Well, gosh. Here we are. I mean, we're almost done for the night. Wow. This has been great.
Well, thank you so
Crystal,
much
you have been wonderful.
This has been great.
It has. And, you know, we could go on for another hour or so. But, any last words or anything you would like to add before I give you the scary questions?
Sure. Bring it on.
All right.
Like I said, you can look me up on Facebook at Crystal, you know, official Crystal Ravenwolf. And if you have any questions on the Rogue Festival, please go to www.roguefestival.com for the release of any dates and times for the next festival. And come see our show, Fire and Ice.
Fire and Ice. Sweet.
Okay, now ask me the scary ones.
All right. We do this. It's just kind of a fun thing.
Okay.
We tend to do this with every guest we have on, if we had the time. And we ask them quick questions. Okay, brace yourself. Okay, here we go. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, Crystal. All right, question number one. Do you make eye contact when you make love?
Only when the lights are on.
Only when the lights are on, huh?
Good answer.
Okay, well, that begs another question right there. Do you make love often with the lights on or the lights off, or which do you prefer?
Lights on. So that I can
lights on, really? You like to see that. This is one of the best answers I've ever heard. Oh my God, I'm about to choke on my own saliva from laughing. That's great.
Which can also be fun.
So you prefer to see everything that's happening.
I am a seer.
You are
so
you're visual. That's typically a male response. Males are like, I gotta see this, you know. That's why males like, you know, Playboy and stuff like that. But wow, okay, great.
Well, you know, I am clairvoyant, so.
Oh, that's right. All right. Next question. And I don't know how much of a Facebooker you are, but there's this trend going on where, I don't know, people like to like their own posts. I mean, do you think it's okay and cool for people to like their own posts on Facebook?
Only if they really like what they're liking. Because on a personal note, I really like me. So,
you really like okay.
You know, I might like something that I've liked, you know, that I put out there for everybody else to like. So.
Okay.
Sure.
All right. Sweet. Okay. Well, you know, there's another question that we always tend to give to people, but it seems like it's become totally irrelevant because we've had so many people on the show who don't have real names. We've had a lot of rap artists and stuff like that. You know, they don't have real names. And, of course, you know, I'm sure you weren't born Crystal Ravenwolf. So.
Oh, I was born with that. But go on.
You were born with that. 100%. Okay. All right. I was going to, like, well, you know what? Next question. Here we go. Skipping that one. Oh, you've been so much fun. All right, last question, and really quick because we're about to chime out here. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. This one. Okay. Brace yourself. All right. Threesomes. I think threesomes reveal a lot of who we are. If you were involved in a threesome, you know, would you consider yourself to be the queen bee or the worker bee?
Oh, the queen bee. Okay. Yeah, no. Did you not see how many subjects we had that I was doing? I'm tired.
I did.
I'm tired.
All right. All right.
I think they need to do the work.
Thank you so much, Crystal, for being on. You've been wonderful. We have to have you on again sometime soon. I'm telling you, we're up against the clock here, and we're about to. Chime on out here, and thank you again so much, Crystal Ravenwolf. You've been wonderful and fun, and we're gonna just go on out with a little bit of Back in Baby's Arms.
Mallory.
All right on.